They have standards, and you have standards, and there's no shame in that.
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, We Are All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Howdy everybody.
And Tanya Gates.
Hey everybody.
Welcome to the show. I apologize for getting last week's show out this week, really, a little bit late. Gen Con was a thing.
It definitely was a thing. That happened. And you were there.
I was. If you have not been to Gen Con, it's one of those events we talked about where all, you know, tons of vendors come and they're showcasing either their brand new stuff or the stuff that's about to come out or some really hot, mostly like board type games there, you know, board and card. And of course, you know, some miniature games workshop was there. I was there.
Well, there was also, were you saying there was people launching like novels there? Like,
There's books. I mean, it's kind of like basically Nerdvana, you know, there's all kind of stuff happening there. Largely mostly around the board games, though.
I think it's amazing. I would love to go one year.
Yeah, I don't know how many tens of thousands of people were there, but so last year you could definitely tell that there weren't as many vendors there. There were more vendors there than were there than last year, but I don't know if they were like at capacity again. So obviously,
it makes sense. There are a lot of industries that are taking a pretty significant downturn recently, which is great to hear that things are getting back on track.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, of course, the Games Workshop booth crowded all the whole time. People there doing demos. I was actually running Kill Team demos, like I mentioned, and to a full table every time. I had Buddy Dylan next to me running Blood Bowl demos. People there the whole time. This is a whole day. This like starts at 10 a.m. does not end until 6. That's, you know, I actually ran about hour long demos, about 45 to 55, sometimes an hour long demos, playing through the first couple of turns of the game with brand new players or people that had. There was a few folks that's like, yo, I got the game, but I really haven't, you know, come to grips with the rules yet. Are you cool showing me how to play? Well, of course, let's do it. Whatever gets that hobby on the table quicker.
Well, that is a thing. That is a thing. Yeah, like you get so many kids walking into things like brick and mortar G-dubs, being in awe, being like, oh my god, this is the greatest place I've ever been. This is a wonderland. And then, I mean, that's how my first introduction to the hobby was. I bought a Space Marine Sergeant, slapped it together with awful glue, ruined the model, and then it sat on a shelf because I just didn't know what I was doing. A lot of the time, people just need guidance, like nerds especially, just a little bit of guidance, and then, you know, just turns it into self-starters, and you got somebody who's with the hobby for, you know, possibly a life.
So I'm curious, was it all just sort of specialty games that they were demoing there? Because you said that Gen Con is more about board games and whatnot, or was there also painting demos and stuff there? Like, what all did GW have?
Yeah, there were actually a lot of stuff. There were kind of three round tournaments, several that would just fire off a couple a day that had a fair amount of people playing. There were a bits assembly competition where I think you bought the event specific miniature and you got to like harvest bits from mini kids to kind of build a mini diorama. Cool thing. There were painting classes done by some of the best painters in the world. I mean, Kayla McCatt and Dan Osborne doing painting tutorials, classes you could sign up for, airbrush stuff, like masterclass type stuff. There was, again, just a big representation. And then there was also Kill Team Live. Kill Team Live is one of the things that if you have a Warhammer Plus subscription, then depending the level of subscription you have, determines something like free plays you can get of that thing. That's the laser tag Kill Team Live thing that you heard us talk about. That was there. So a fairly big presence and people doing stuff Warhammer related.
Did you play any laser tag?
I didn't this time. I didn't because it was one of those to where I knew how busy the laser tag folks were. And I didn't want to go over like, yo, could you give me in for one extra game after the
con? Out of the way, kid, I'm telling you. Don't you know who I am? Go to Big Shot.
No. It's like, because, you know, we're working I'm over there at the booth. So when the vendor stuff closes, you know, you basically have to go over to people who've also been working the whole day and say like, yo, can you work for another 30 minutes? It's like, you just don't want to do that. But I had a blast. And lasers, I tell you, Kill Team Live was packed the entire. There was also there was a tournament. They ran another tournament there.
It's Kill Team Live was one of the highlights of my Adepticon experience. It was laying the smack down on AOS players.
In Kill Team Live, is there like barricades and stuff that you hide? Like, what is the sort of terrain like inside the laser tag?
Yeah, it's an arena with things like boxes and barricades, and you know, what are the camo netting over things. There are not makeshift walls, but there's fabric that is printed like the hives in Necromunda.
Neat.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, there's it's got they've done a really clever thing, because naturally this needs to be a setup that is transported, you know, across the country, possibly across the world someday. And so they've got these really cool, almost like you see the neoprene mats with really high definition printed patterns and styles, and they've got like essentially that but canvassed over screens. So they've got that as to be like the walls in it, like the walls of the hive or the zone mortalis or whatever. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty clever way of doing it as well.
You explained that much better than I did, but yeah, that's you kind of simulated in a Warhammer 40,000 environment arena, and you are competing for objectives. And the same thing, it's like sometimes to clear an objective or to capture an objective, you have to eliminate your opponent. So you gotta zap them sometimes, and you gotta control and defend the objective, and you do that over the course of a 8 or 15 mm-hmm. minute experience, and whoever gets the most points.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's very cool. It's very high energy for that period of time, and everybody comes out like, "Wow, how long were you in there? An hour? No, it's like 8 minutes." But you really worked for it. It's pretty cool. But it's, again, that's one of the things when your Warhammer Plus subscription says and some things at events. This is one of those things at the events you can do. So, you know, like if you're in there, if you're in a place where that is, make sure you utilize that. But yeah, it was a bunch of stuff. And in the booth, they actually had some of the Joy Toy stuff there for sale.
Yep, awesome.
Yeah, those things, when you hold them in your hand, they're cool on the screen, right? But spectacular in your hands.
Yeah, just the detail. You're talking about the large figurines,
yeah,
right? Yeah, oh man, I've seen some in the flesh. I was actually really impressed with the definition and the detail and whatnot.
That Invictor warsuit feels like it's 2 feet tall.
It's huge. It's really huge. It's like they're really walking the line, because I always picture these as being the things you chuck on your desk, you know, at work, or chuck on the shelf, like, you know, of your shelf desk or your hobby desk or whatever. They're really like, how big can we make this before it's too big for a desk? And they're like, let's do the Invictor size. And like, that's just like on the tippy. Yeah, it's still perfect, but they're toying with it.
So finely detailed, and the Space Marine inside the Invictor warsuit, you can open that thing up, he comes out.
Yeah, I think figure. That's awesome as well.
Yeah, it's so cool. But that stuff was there, so that was very popular. People, you know, once you get your hands on him, you're like, oh yeah, I got to get this. But that's, you know, Blood Bowl, of course, Kill Team, lots of things that sold. I think because people enjoyed it. Like, Kill Team is one of those games that it plays, and it does play very similar to a board game, but still very much in the vein of Warhammer. But I did enjoy walking people through it and seeing people when they would figure out the strategy, like, oh, so if I run here and jump over this wall and then do this, then I'm concealed, and then I can like launch my assault the next turn. Like, yeah, of course you can, man. Get in there.
We were speculating about what sets you were going to be using. Which ones did you end up using?
I did a stream, like a very impromptu stream, on the Gen Con livecast that they did.
Dude,
we
awesome.
Used the Orc versus Krieg, but I went with the Space Marines versus Necrons. And the reason that I went with that, I was able to kind of demonstrate, you didn't have to, there weren't a bunch of extra rules to learn. Like, there is, with the Krieg, there is, I don't want to say complexity, but, you know, it's like, oh, that guy can do this and buff this guy or whatever. You know, the Necrons were, this guy zaps, and the Space Marines were, this guy runs and wants to try to charge. But it's how you do it, you know, the complexity of how you do it, that I got to showcase, instead of just having somebody stare at a book the whole time.
Yeah, how really, really having to explain the power of the Krieg shovel to new players, they're just not ready. Like, they're not prepared.
On the stream, it was actually myself and Mike Brandt. We were in the stream. They weren't really set up to do it a top down. Like, this is how you look at this game or whatever. It was they were the stream we were kind of set up to do almost like a front-facing interview or something like that. But we're just gonna play Kill Team, and actually engineered this scenario. Well, not really, didn't go out of my way to engineer it, but had the guy go up and plant a mine on the objective. And I was playing Krieg, of course, and Mike's playing the orcs, and the orcs in this one turn just explode a guardsman with their rocket launcher, charge into combat, don't kill the Krieg guy in the combat, and then a plasma gunner vaporizes himself and another orc. And then I said, you know what, let's just hit the button on this mine. And I took out the orc that charged and three or four other Krieg guardsmen, and was still up a point on the objective, I think. And then we're out of time.
So thematic.
It was a good time. I think it was a cool thing. But anyway, that's you know it gets it that's what you can do in Kill Team, which was cool as people start to kind of we played through two turns typically in the demo, and on that second turn, sometimes there was one or two demos people were like, yeah, we don't need your advice anymore, Paul. I have this. We're going for blood. Which was cool because everyone took it in real good spirits, and that's the conversation that you have is, people are like, do these come painted? So you got to be real cognizant that you're taking people on a hobby journey, possibly.
Yeah, I just imagine there's like a there's an end game for GW where they've just got a booth set up where the people walk in and ask, do these come painted? And you're like, no, but see that literally the next step along in this process, that guy can teach you how to paint. And then there's a little one between them where someone will teach you how to build. And then you're like, so you can just rock up, play a demo game, love the game, and then stay there for like the next 2 hours learning all the basics required to build, paint, prep, like in an awesome company,
that's
in a beautiful setting.
A neat idea. Yeah. Like you just sit there and just build marines or something, build models.
Just here to help, brother. Like,
Also, they should just be slapping a QR code on the front of the box that they scan, and it just takes them right to Warhammer TV.
Ooh, that's a good one too.
Oh, all their questions
you could do that
are
with
answered.
A sticker.
Like, you're listening, GW. You're just harvesting the gold from the end crew.
That would be. Although I will say that people get as soon as they got their hands on the models and wanted to mess around, like it was like these are cool. Like pose them however you want. Let people know that there's more to it than this is just the basic scenario. This is a scenario in the game. But Kill Team has a lot of replayability, and one of the coolest things about it, like we talked about on the last show, is that you could get blown out, and then you're only 20 minutes deep, and you can just play again.
You just re-rack. Oh, the dice killed the game. Who cares? Like, it takes 5 seconds to put it back together and go again.
Change the train around, flip the tokens back over, and let's do it.
Dude, I had a practice game yesterday where I played a Grey Knight list into Tyranids, and the Flyrant managed to get into my 10 paladins and just killed 8 of them, and I was like, yeah, cool. That's probably the end of the game. We can re-rack and go again because, I just failed on my 4-up invul, sorry, 4-up armor saves or whatever. And then, it took us 25 minutes to reset because we started resetting, went to the bathroom, made a cup of tea, came back. And then, so Kill Team, not that problem.
Yeah, and with the same figures. I mean, it's a neat thing. So that was at Gen Con. Awesome. Met some cool people outside of the Warhammer world, folks in the D&D world and other vendors and stuff like that. I will say the drawback is that by the time I got free to go get one of the games that I wanted, it was sold out.
No.
That's okay. Small price to pay for all the good memories and the thing, and I'll get it eventually.
You will. You'll get there.
Yeah. But no, his enthusiasm for just the hobby or gaming in general, it's kind of unmatched in a Gen Con.
Well, it's just unmatched in the flesh suit that the spirit of Paul Murphy wears.
And then going back to the hotel and hanging out in the hotel, like restaurant bar area, to seeing people play games. I met the inventor of Bop It.
Yep.
That's like from my childhood. Oh my
that's
goodness.
That's the one. He's sitting in the hotel bar wearing a thick gold chain with a gold medallion with the Bop It label on it. No, this is no lie.
Neat.
And one of the buddies we were with, he's like, man, I wonder if that thing works. And he goes over and talks to the guy and turns out the dude is the inventor of Bop It. And his wow. medallion did work. You could Bop It.
You could Bop It. I remember that from my. I never owned one of those. I had a friend who did, and I tried to use it like twice, and then I put it down and realized I was not the kid for that. My brain don't work you like that.
But that's just one, you know, one example of the cool folks is some folks from the D&D world and the board games, and just seeing people playing their games they got earlier that day in the hotel. It's like just wall to wall cool geek stuff.
Mm.
Cool people. Really enjoy.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you were there and we got to fist bump or say what's up, it was great meeting you, and you know, definitely going to be back next year. So now, can I shift gears a second?
I guess.
I know, and talk about the Horus Heresy. This is...
Oof, I'm here for it.
Yeah, so Liber Mechanicum, I think, up for pre-order by the
time. Yeah, so this is the third book, yeah. We've had the Liber Hereticus, Liber, whatever the Imperial one is.
That's the Liber Astartes.
Had the good Astartes and the bad Astartes, and now we're having essentially the forces of Mars in addition to the Titans and the Knights, which can also be from Mars, of course. But yeah, this is the one that I'm really looking forward to, because it's I guess it adds the density and flavor to it. There are a lot of people who love the Horus Heresy because it brings that. There is an element to tabletop gaming that. Where people want to simulate like a more chess-like experience, where you're playing with very similar profiles, very similar units, and then it's whoever uses them best, whoever makes the better decisions wins the game.
I think that's part of the appeal. Almost like, yeah. I mean, I know it's Warhammer 40,000 history, but it plays similar to maybe somehow to some historical game system.
Exactly. Exactly right. And people want and of course the Horus Heresy is phenomenally a lot deeper than that, but at a very surface level, you can see that as the Astartes on Astartes level of this game, where you can play with very similar armies with, you know, the added flavor being from your chosen legion or whatever, like you're playing with some Galvabrak or special characters like Lorgar in your Wordbearers versus, you know, someone's Salamanders, maybe they've got Vulcan or some of the Pyroclasts. I love those models, you know, whatnot. And so that's your flavor, but at a fundamental level, you're playing with very similar profiles. They might act differently, but you know, there is a level of balance inherent to that situation that I think is hard to simulate in other games, and it's one of the very special things about the Heresy. But then you add on essentially I call it the Mars patch. You know, cool. We got all these Astartes. We're gonna add the Mars patch. Here comes the Tagmata. Here comes the Night Houses. Here comes the Titans. Even if you want to go that big, and it can really spice things up in a lot of really exciting ways. And I suppose it adds that extra cog in the wheel of this Heresy machine, which I'm very excited to see it added to the game.
When we see what they're doing with the books now, is that there was some design space to kind of meander through that they didn't get a chance to do in 7th.
Yeah, exactly right. It seems like they just had a whole playbook they just didn't get around to using, and now they're just going back a kid in a candy store style and be like, hey, we're going to put that in, we're going to put that in, we're going to put that in. It's awesome.
And this book is deeper than I expected when I first got it. I'm like, oh, okay. Now, look, I actually have a Mechanicum Force for Heresy. Love the models. I love the troops. Some of the troops, you know, the Thalax and the Thanatars. Those are cool models to me. I really like them, but I still didn't realize quite the number of units, and when especially when you add in the Knights that were available to the Mechanicum.
Oh, it's a full, they got a full range, like a fully fleshed out range. And there's some of the ones that's the models that stick in your head, like the Thanatar, like the big boy and the Maguses riding in their little pulpits and stuff. But then there's just so many little units that you just don't see that often. I think it's the Myrmidon. The Myrmidon. I didn't know they existed for a long time.
The things that the bloat drones are, you know, apparently descended
modeled after. Yep. There's the Vorax battle automatas, which they're really interesting looking, like insectoid hunched over models that like they're really quite cool. But yeah, it's a fully fleshed out range. And then they've got some of the most bespoke, like unique looking tanks and vehicles that you'll see anywhere. I think they look absolutely amazing, and it's their design choices are so like Mechanicum unique. Like is it the Cryos Venator and battle tank, and it's like, you know what we're gonna do Mechanicum style, we're gonna get a gun and we're gonna put tracks on each side of it, and there's your tank.
That thing is cool. I don't have one of those yet, but that would be sweet. There's like 120 pages of rules in this book. It's mostly rules. It's mostly, I mean, I shouldn't say mostly rules, but it's 120 pages of options.
So whenever I get one of those books, like it'd be a black book or red book from Forge World, the first thing I would do was like sit down with a hot drink and just look at the art. Just be like, what fantastic art did they cook up for this book? Is there some good art in there?
There is. And there's also in the, you know, the way the pages are laid out, this is, if I had to critique it, is like, okay, I get it that we're using the pre-modern template for pages, but man, put the weapons on the pages. You got the space.
Yeah.
Got the space.
Yeah, I feel you, man.
But we get to see the cool art instead of the weapons. I'll flip a couple extra pages to get that art feel.
It's a thing. Because is it from, are they sold, they're sold by a G-Dub now, yeah? Because it's Horus Heresy is now like a pretty main, is a mainline game.
Oh, yeah.
So I was hoping they didn't lose that feel in translation because it's no longer a Forgeware book. Like, it's no longer a bespoke, you know, far more expensive, obviously, Forge World book. It's now a, you know, a mainline game, but I was hoping it still had that Heresy feel to it.
It definitely has that, even that Imperial armor feel to it, where you're holding this hardback book.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You've got the cool, like, pencil art.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, not pencil, but you know what I'm saying? Like, the art that you're thinking of is on every page.
Tell us about some of the rules. I mean, I'm interested about the Knight rules because I want that to be my next Heresy army, as I probably said every episode for the last, like, since the Heresy came out. So,
well, you could do
this. This is my book. This is the book that I'm most interested in.
So it gets a little bit different with the whole Lords of War and how you get detachments and that kind of stuff. So in a 2,000 point game, the maximum combined Lord of War or Primarch value that you can have is 500 points, and I know that in previous iterations of this game, over the Horus Heresy game anyway, most people didn't play 2,000 points. They played 3,000 points.
Yeah, because 3,000 points was when you felt like it was okay to take your Lords of War. It was okay to take your Typhus, your Fellblade, your Glaive, your big toy, your Mastodon, or whatever it may be, and you didn't feel like you were going to give your opponent a bad time.
And that gives you up to 750 points when you take the 3,000 point.
I think it's a good system as well. I like that system. It feels, because it's very similar to what Fantasy used to do, where you used to have to take a min amount of troops, a min amount, you know, and then you're going to have a max amount of your special or rare choices. I still like that. I still like that army construction style.
So you can take the knights or, a knight or two, depending on what the point level is. And then you can give, some household ranks to them.
Ooh, cool. So you can have like a baron or a matriarch, patriarch.
These do count as points. One of the cool ones is Implacable, which is a 65-point upgrade. A model with this upgrade increases its hull points by one and gains the character unit subtype and the Implacable Special Rule. The Implacable Special Rule is no attack. Targeting a model with the Special Rule may inflict more than a single hull point of damage, including those attacks with Exo Shock X Special Rule.
That's pretty cool. So that's, well, for 40K comparison, that's woundicating. That's, you know, putting a limit on how much damage you can take per turn, like Gazkul does, like Abaddon does. That's a pretty cool mechanic to add in there, because I've certainly had it, especially in the 7th edition, where you would just get kind of one shot by, you know, a melter unit or a plasma unit, or somebody gets to your side and hits you with a couple of penetrating auto cannons, or hits the rending on all their assault cannons, etc.
So the Atropos is a 500-point model. That 80-point upgrade would get you, you know, well within the band of a 3,000-point game.
Mm.
And he's got 8 hull points, so it'd be 9. And
brilliant.
Probably a problem.
With the Mechanicum side of things, they were possibly the most complex army to build in the previous iteration of the Heresy. They had just like, I don't know what they called them back then, but there was like, you could choose different sections of the Tagmata. Like there were different... I suppose you could almost call them chapters within that. Is that still a line of flavor they've added to this? Like you could choose to...
There are. You can be like a cyber theurgist, high techno order, the high techno arcana. That is not in here.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
Yeah. I just, you know, kind of want to highlight the fact that the flavor is there. You've got a bunch of different options. I think it's going to, well, one, people that already had the army were probably, you know, chomping at the bit to get it on the table, and you're going to be able to and not feel bad about it. Like, it's tons of good stuff in here.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm pleased. I've not built a sample army list. I've just gotten this in my hand, but I am pleased with the variants that I can do and kind of easily bring in some knights and stuff if I wanted to.
Mm. How's your Heresy journey going, Tanya?
I mean, it's kind of stalled, and I have had an opportunity come my way, so I have to stress paint this entire month. So there will be no Horus Heresy for me until September at the earliest.
Fair enough.
Stress painting would be a good topic for the next segment.
Yeah, perfect. We just that was an easy layup, wasn't it? which schemes? Because I know you did a couple of test models. Which schemes did you end up trying out?
I did a test run for Alpha Legion, and I liked how it turned out. But like deep within inside my heart, when it comes to power armor, I'm a space wolf. So I mean, I have to follow my like space wolf heart, and
fair.
That'll be the way that I end up going if I do decide to go on the Horus Heresy path, which, I mean, is probably going to happen. My husband has already painted over 2,000 points of Iron Warriors, so...
He is cranking them out. you sent me some pictures, and you're like, he did this in, like, an hour, and I'm like, wow.
I know.
That's pretty good.
He's a machine, so he really wants to play, and so that'll probably be my next focus, at least for a little bit. Like, I'll probably get like 500 points done, so we could just do like a small little game, so I can test it out.
Well, if he's cranking them out that hard, you get him to do it. You want me to play?
Then they won't be mine.
Yeah,
I can respect that.
I don't. It just feels so weird to play somebody else's models. Like I played a couple of games at Mini Wargaming, and I played somebody else's models, and I was like, this is so strange.
I wish I had mine. The first time someone walked up to me and asked me if they can borrow some of my guard models, I was like, that feels weird. I don't want to do this. I ended up saying yes, but at the start I was like, I think I need to think about this. It's like you know, sending your children out on a play date when you don't know the other person, the other party, if they're going to be treated right. You're like,
I have a hard time loaning out my models. I probably would if I was like playing with the person. But if they were like taking my models away from me to go play with somebody else, I think I'd be like, eh.
Cautionary tale. I have the biggest guard collection in my local area. I'm probably the guy with the biggest guard collection in the competitive scene in my state, if not. And in 8th edition, everyone wanted to take their loyal 32 along with their whatever Imperial army was. Yeah. I at one point I had because I own over 200 infantry, and at one point I had every single one of them out on loan, every single one.
Whoa.
And I did not get them all back because I have less than 200 infantry now. So well, that's the thing. I lent them out, and I lent out too many at once. I lost track of who had them, and so somebody's got some of my guardsmen, and I'm not too happy about it. But cautionary tale.
Get those Cadians back.
Yeah, they're gonna I'll just find a Cadian arm in the mail with a letter. If you want the rest, like, I'll be like,
No questions asked. Just put them in a clear Ziploc bag on your porch.
Yes. Cautionary tale for everybody out there. When you're lending out multiple models, keep a little black book of who's got what.
That's a good idea. I mean, I don't mind lending out models too, especially, you know, when with the collection being what it is, and if somebody's, you know, wanting to try something out before they get it themselves, or just, you know, really have an idea for a tournament, then, you know, happy to do it for the local folk, you know, that are...
You're so much nicer than I am.
No, I actually get the idea of, you know, just really wanting to play with your own models in your game, you know, so I completely respect that.
Mm.
Speaking of which, let's take a break. Then we'll come back and we'll talk about stress painting, event painting.
Yeah.
My favorite.
And maybe a little bit more Horus Heresy stuff, but we'll see you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Yeah, I know we've talked about this stuff before, but event-driven painting, you know, but you've got something else, not just an event.
What makes it stress painting over and above regular painting for an event?
Because I think for an event, you can get away with it being a little bit less good.
So there's a minimum requirement you must meet for tournaments, and that minimum requirement is achievable to competent painters.
Battle quickly, ready.
Quickly. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas,
what are you painting for, if you're able to say?
So I am going back to play on tabletop to play a couple of games, and this time it is two different armies that I'm bringing. So I just finished painting up my first army list today, and now I've got just under 4 weeks to paint a big chunk of my second list. Yeah, so I just laid it all out today to like visualize what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And I assembled some stuff. Yes, I had to assemble some stuff for it. And yeah, and then on top of that, I have to like find time to test play these lists as well for two separate armies, for two separate game systems. And it's like, it's a lot. It's a lot. It takes a lot of time management in order to get it all done. But yeah, I've done it before. It's just stressful is all.
Fair. And one of the, of course, the reason that's making it stressful for you and you can't just battle ready to whatever is because one of the great things about that mob is the extremely high level of production value they have. Mm-hmm. Very good cameras. So if your stuff isn't up to scratch, it's a bit apparent.
Yeah. So it's all 4K cameras and like mm-hmm. there's lots of cinematics. So like not always, but sometimes I leave the armies overnight and then they do all the cinematics like first thing in the morning. And that's like super close up with all the terrain and crazy lighting and stuff like that. So you can't really have even a few models that aren't quite finished. Like everything has to kind of look cohesive because you never know what they're going to pick.
Where the camera's going to be.
Yeah. So,
look,
but that's okay.
I mean, they have standards and you have standards and there's no shame in that, you know?
Standards are quite similar. So that's good.
It is very good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. With that stress painting or whatever, it's to bring your best for this cool thing you're doing.
Yeah, and it's a thing that potentially could like live forever on the internet, and that is always cool. Like it is really, really cool to see your minis displayed in such a cool cinematic and professional way. So that's another reason why I just really want to bring my A game. Every single time I go.
So how are you going about this? Have you got a plan of action? Have you got like, you know, this needs to be done by this? How strict are you putting yourself through? Do you have an X mm-hmm. amount of hours you got to do every day to get it done on time?
3 minutes mm-hmm. done every other day.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of characters that I have to do. One of them is quite large. And then I have like, I think four different types of infantry that I have to pick. No, three different types of infantry and then another large model. So essentially I'm going to have to do the big blocks of infantry, each one of them in a week. And then I have another week to do the big models and then like the characters as well. So, I've sort of picked models that I think I can get done in time. This is a huge thing about why my lists look so funny mm-hmm. when I go to play on. One, because I want them to look really varied. I don't like to spam things because I think it doesn't look as visually nice. But I also pick things that I really could get done in time. So in this case, I'm playing for this, I'm doing orcs. So I tried not to pick things that had too much skin because my orc skin takes a really long time to paint, so it's going to be a lot more like sort of mechanical and armored bits that I need to do. So it is very strategic in how I sort of approach it, and I will be painting probably 8 to 12 hours a day.
That's wild. 8 to 12 hours a day. Those are full-time hours.
Get it done. That's
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. But it's like 8 to 8 every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
I admire it. I respect it.
Well, it's every day except for the test playing game days. Those days are going to be shorter. Like I'm test playing the one list tomorrow. So I will paint probably 8 to 2 and then I'll play 2 to 5. And then I'll come home, cook dinner, all that, and then I'll paint till I go to bed.
I mean, part of me is like, that's a great life. I would happily like do that all the time. But I know how stressful it can be.
Yeah.
So, everybody says
that to them, like on day two of that. And they're like, somebody please paint these models.
Yeah.
Possibly week two, depending on how into it you are, how into the scheme.
But, I mean, there'd be no way that I could do this if I worked like a regular job. But the majority of what I do for my work is I do 3D renders of miniatures. So to do that, that takes a while, right? So you set it all up and then the computer makes the render. So there's a lot of downtime. So in the downtime, I'm actually painting. So hashtag blessed for my job that allows me to do this.
It's pretty awesome.
I've been staring at these four Chaos Knights, and I've got all the chipping and stuff done, but I haven't painted any of the armor strapping or bands or whatever. And they're taunting me. Like, if I,
you know what you need to do? You need to sign up and go to a tournament with your knights.
They'll just
magically be painted.
Yeah,
exactly.
You just black out for 4 hours and you wake up like, oh,
that is literally how it works for me. I've never rocked up to an event with my stuff not being up to my standard.
Same.
Once I sign up, the power of the spirit of the paint takes me, the spirit of the hobby. Like it's like, what are the, is it Christmas Carol? There's the three ghosts, hobby past, hobby present, hobby future. The ghosts,
but it's all the same ghost just telling you to paint your models.
Exactly right. It's the same person. They've got longer beards and more haggard eyes.
Just shows up like, weren't you here like an hour ago? Are your models done yet?
Yeah.
You know, answer your own question there, jerky.
Thumb in the back of your head, pushes your head into the paint pot. Oh, do it. Yeah, love it.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah, they're sitting over there. It's like no urgency, no agenda. And this is just the list is playable as soon as those are done, you know. But hey,
yeah. I do notice though, like, I have to leave my cell phone on the other side of the room. Like, I can't have any distractions whatsoever. So if anybody's trying to reach me, I'm sorry, you're not going to reach me until September.
Just know. Yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. Good luck.
Maybe I should vlog it so people can like watch my sort of psychological downfall.
That is, I mean, we talk about like the inspiration to get things done. Sometimes that closure, like, I do encourage people to post their work in progress stuff on the internet. Just, I mean, like, if they're comfortable doing it, but as a way to kind of inspire you to finish it.
And if you're a person who is searching through social media and you see those work in progress pictures, just give some words of encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
You got this. That looks great already. You know?
Yeah, throw a like on there. Let them know that you've seen it. You think it's cool. They had the courage to post it. And that's what keeps the world going around. That's what, actually, with the way that like algorithms and stuff work, that's one of the ways that, you know, even folks without a ton of like accumulated followers or whatever can still get seen because you liked it. And it might appear in somebody else's feed and they can see it.
Like a lot of my mates are, when I share a picture of like something I've just, you know, spent 20 hours of my life on, they're like, "Ah, oh, terrible, stripper, start over." I'm like, my soul. And they're joking.
They don't really mean it,
they,
right?
No, they're just, don't. They
so
don't.
Technically, still, it's an engagement, and that's okay.
The algorithm loves it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, exactly. We do support each other, because even it's like, it may not be the best figure you've ever seen, but that might be the best that they've done, and everybody starts somewhere.
That's right.
So I think that's cool. But yeah, I'm telling you, I need to take a page out of your book and get this set up to do the same thing and get these done.
I'm gonna message you every day. Did you do those straps yet?
Yeah, there is a project that I want to do. It's a kill team, believe it or not, you know, because now it's on my mind. I want to get it done, but I don't want to put these knights on the shelf unfinished.
You know what you do? You need to have a schedule. So you'd be like, okay, I have 3 hours of free time or whatever. You have kids, you probably never have 3 hours of free time. But, you know, I've got 30 minutes of free time this day. That's when I'm going to work on it. If I didn't have a schedule or deadlines, I would never finish anything.
Just every time you do something, you have it, that's something you don't have to do before or do after. And it is one of these things to where I know I could rush it and get it just off my plate. But I those standards we talk about, they'll get you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. When I know I'm not doing, these guys aren't going to look like the rest of the guys, there is no going back. They have to be, it has to be done to the same level.
Yeah. Basing and everything too. It's like, it's got to be.
Exactly. Whatever it takes.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, yep. All right, well, that's it. Good luck, Tanya. Keep us posted on how that is going.
Yeah. If you don't hear from me next week, you know, send help.
I'll check in on the vlogs and just watch the decline and see how bad it is, where you need help.
Show
up with brushes.
Back on the heresy a little bit is that we got the preview for World Eater parts.
Oh, yeah. With GW bringing out all the upgrade kits. They also got the one for Space Wolves, but maybe we don't want to talk about that
See,
one.
See, we need to talk about Wolfgate.
Wolfgate?
Or whatever. Oh. But, like, there's a lot of people really disappointed. I should say, they're... I was trying to think of a cool Space Wolf pun, but I'm blanking on it. I really was. I'm like, this needs to be natural. I need to wing it out. You know, but they're definitely, they seem to be troubled by the fact that there's Space Wolf, you know, like the carved head on the upgrade.
I have many opinions on this.
Lots of opinions on Space Wolves.
Yeah, I like the aesthetic when it's not too overdone. And if someone said to me, "Oh, Adam, what would the Space Wolf upgrade screw look like?" I'd be like, "Bunch of bare heads with bearded savages, you know, screaming, yelling, fetishes, stuff like that." It wouldn't be 10 identical. I don't think they particularly look good wolf heads. That's not what I would have thought.
I like the heads.
I knew you would. I like
them better than regular helmets, but I enjoy painting faces, so I'd rather have bare heads.
Well, and isn't that thematically the fluff for the route? Like they have a lot of bare-headed warriors. It's part of their shtick. So maybe, like, you know, if I had to guess, it would be a couple of regular helmets with some fetishes, a couple of bear heads, and one wolf head to chuck on your Sarge. Like, one wolf head helmet to chuck on your Sarge. My Dark Angel sprue has one winged head to chuck on a Sarge. You have one wolf head to chuck on a Sarge. I'm just not a fan of the fact they look the same, I think, is where I'm going with this. If just one or two of that design would have been absolutely fine. All of them the same, not here for it.
Well, it's not like you don't get the other helmets that come with their other Marines you're upgrading.
Well, exactly right. You're starting. Well, if you want to just do one per Sarge, you know, you buy one of these and you're good for 10 squads,
yeah,
technically.
Set. Or yeah, just elites or something. I mean, again, I don't want to say that I don't get why some folks think that that's not, maybe that's not period for the time, and it's more of a, but who knows? I don't really know what the beef is. I think they're awesome.
Yeah, I'm not surprised people in the Heresy have opinions.
No, but we play the game for the aesthetic, and if it doesn't match exactly what we want, I think it's fair to be critical. You know,
I think it's fair to be critical as well. And look, G-Dub, in my opinion, knock it all out of the park. I mean, I don't think this is bad. This just isn't for me. I mean, and it's not like I play Space Wolves. I mean, I'm having an opinion on a product I was never going to buy, so I should probably just shut up and Space Wolves.
Well, that is right? The benefit of, like, having a podcast. We can do that sometimes.
It's true.
Most
yeah.
of the people that I've seen who do hate these helmets don't play Space Wolves.
Space Wolves, exactly right. And I suppose with the heads playing devil's advocate against all the negative and kind of counterpointing my own argument, if you want all the bare heads, buy some blood claws, buy some long fangs. You get a crap ton of them. Those heads have already been made. So maybe G-Dub was like, well, we've got a bajillion of that design already, so let's do a kit we haven't done yet.
So with the World Eaters, though, it's the blue that they chose, I think, is a different blue than we've seen before.
Yeah, as are you alluding to, maybe there's a new paint coming out?
I don't mean like a different formula of blue. I mean, I think it's a little bit different blue than we've seen on World Eaters before. It's like a slightly lighter shade of blue, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, I remember looking at that kit. I'm just going to pull it up right now.
And I might be wrong. I might be completely wrong. I'm just looking at that blue, and I'm like, is that a different blue?
You might be right, mate. It is. So I know when a lot of the that is different blue. Is it more pastel? Although it's a bit lighter.
I know we should wait till Red's back to talk about this as Korn and the World Eaters are his thing. We can have him weigh on the blue tint next week.
I like their helmets a lot. I like their helmets quite a lot. I think they're cool. So their upgrade kit, their shoulder vicious. Pads, their helmets.
Look vicious in that way of, you know, linking them to what their 40K, which we did see, Berserker.
Little splash of red as well. It goes a long way. Love it.
That is one of the coolest things about that color scheme with the blue and white, is that when you put the blood drops on there, which not everyone has to do. That's a technical thing. And if you're not at that step in your hobby and you feel confident in that, you should try it and be prepared to paint over it if you don't like it.
Correct.
But it looks cool. Those little splashes.
There's I've never tried this personally, but it was a friend of mine who was telling me his process of doing his World Eaters. He'd use you call it a retarder, like it's something you add to your paint so it doesn't set quickly.
Yep.
And then he would do the paintbrush method. So he'd get a little bit of the paint on a paintbrush and flick the paintbrush so he gets a random pattern. Because it was taking a lot longer to dry, if he didn't like it, he could remove the bits where it was, if it did too much or not enough. Or he could strategically move it around because he had the time. I think that's a cool way of doing it. And you could do a whole bunch, you know, very quickly if you wanted to, if you get confident with it.
With the bristles of a toothbrush, it kind of works that way a little bit too.
Mm.
Because they're a little, very, very firm. I'm not with the, I'm not talking about removing it, but when you're getting it on there, you could flick it and you get a little bit more spring, get you a little bit more of a splatter pattern.
Yeah.
Than maybe with a brush.
Or with a sponge or, yeah.
Sponge is a good thing too, or stipple it on there.
Yeah, exactly right.
It does look good. Have confidence that it will look good. Have also confidence in the fact that you're typically not just painting one marine. And so the ones that you like the least, you could just put them in the back.
Yeah, or the first casualties.
Yeah, or the front if you want them shot first.
Yeah, in heresy, you got to put them in the front. Actually, no, you don't need to put them in the front anymore. Never mind.
Well, just saying, you know, you get to have a little agency about how long they stay on the table.
Exactly right.
And also where they're at for the pictures. So, you know, get in there and try it. But I'm digging these upgrades. And they also, today, another Emperor's Children Praetor, which looks fabulous.
Oh, my Lord. I love that model. I'm jealous of that model.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, how can I make this something other? Like, how do you get all these icons off this thing?
It is an absolute home run. Incredible sculpt.
Yeah, it's up there. There's been some pretty good Emperor's Children ones. Isn't Saul Tarvitz
in
Emperor's Children?
Yep.
That's a great model. Like, this is, I mean, look, I'm not going to play Emperor's Children in Heresy, but I've got to find a way to get these models in the Legions that I do want to play because they're spectacular. I just love it that it's a supported game. Like, this is obviously here to stay. It's a mainline game and the kits are more accessible, like we talked about before.
Yeah. Absolutely, mate.
That's what I want to talk about on the Heresy stuff. Just great things coming down the line. I will try to put together a sample Mechanicum list for next week's show.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, I love his little robots. And like the Ursarax, those are the jump pack robots with like claws and fist and stuff.
Yep.
I enjoy those.
Oh, man. When Custodes become playable in Horus Heresy, it'll be a very amazing day for me.
I think that's the next book.
Well, then maybe I won't be playing Space Wolves in Heresy.
Well, I don't know what the time frame, but I think that they're after the Liber Mechanicum sometime.
Sweet. I have so much stuff already painted for that. So
brilliant.
Nice. Yeah. To close out our show, Adam, you want to tell us about the WGC? That's where you're at right now.
Right now I'm sitting. It is early in the morning on Friday. I've got the first day of the actual team tournament happening. Well, 3 hours from now.
Let's not talk about when. Let's.
I'm just trying to build up. I'm so excited, man. It's been 3 years in the making to that this event. You know, should have happened. You know, didn't happen for whatever reasons. You know, the world is pretty crazy. But yeah, just to be here right now is extremely surreal. I'm sitting in a hotel in Mechelen, Belgium. The event's going to be for the next 2 years, playing for the Merc team, just happy to be rolling dice and playing on what I think is the pinnacle of the competitive game. You know, teams, international stage, you just get to meet so many people you never met before, so many mixtures of cultures and experiences. Everyone plays the game same but different, and I'm so privileged to be able to experience it. This will be my third one at this level, even though I'm not representing my country, still just happy to be involved. And dude, it's an absolute time that we were at a bar at midnight in the town square 2 nights ago, and there were 60 nerds all speaking different languages, all saying the same stuff. I love it. I love it so much. It's fantastic.
That's so cool. I mean, again, to be able to take your figures and go play somewhere else is neat. When it's in another country, it seems like even neater.
I've heard that playing at the WTC is the best way to get humbled.
Yes. So apart from obviously my team, we're kind of a mishmash of a bunch of different nations. Most teams are comprised of the best players in their nation. So if you're playing somebody, you know, from France, that's somebody who in France could go to and win like a grand tournament, you know, at a minimum. They're a contender at every tournament they go to. So yeah, if everyone there is a shark. It's the whole thing is a murderer's row. There's 220 odd players and every one of them is a monster. It's really, really cool. It's something special.
Oh, what'd you take?
I'm playing Grey Knights. So for those who don't know, at a lot of team events, you can only take an army once or a faction once. And when I joined the team, I think I was the sixth or I was one of the last players to join that team because I was trying to do the live coverage and unfortunately it fell through. So at the last minute, one of the judges, TO, is like, seeing as you can't play, would you like a spot on the Merc team? I'm like, yeah, chuck me in, coach. Let's go for it. And so they already had a Blood Angels player. So, of course, you can't take Dark Angels then because it's from the same, you know, Astartes Codex.
The Marine family. Supplements.
Yeah, you can only take one of them. So I had to look for – because I didn't want to – they pretty much gave me two options. So you could play a Knight variant, which is a list that I'm really excited to play in the future, but I've just been playing like a defensive, you know, Dark Angels Marine build for the last 12 months. I wasn't confident that I could learn a whole new play style, a whole new faction in the, I think, 5 weeks I had before the event. So I decided to go with the Grey Knights, and because it's it uses a lot of the same skill set is what I thought. It's the closest thing I could play that would reflect the things that I've been playing with and practicing for the last couple of months, you know, the most transferable one. And so, yeah, playing Grey Knights. It's there's no Dread Knights in it. I've got a brick of 10 Paladins. Yeah. Because, you know, I've been playing a bunch of Deathwing Terminators lately. So a brick of 10 Paladins to kind of emulate that. And that's just a bunch of MSU power armor, bits and pieces. With, of course, Drago, because you can't leave the Mad Lad at home.
Was that an intentional choice with the Dread Knights? Or was that something like, was it you just didn't want to travel with them? Or
no, it was an intentional choice. So the Dread Knights, so for those who don't know how the team's events work, your captain or whoever's doing the pairing for your team, because it's eight player teams. There's a lot goes into maneuvering to get the favorable matchups. And because my army is going to be used as a defender, as in I will be a player that is used to blunt other people's armies and try and stop them from scoring rather than get big scores myself, the likelihood of me playing into favorable matchups is lessened. And unfortunately, I think Dread Knights, while they have some really good matchups, they have some really bad ones out there. Like Armor Contempt is for example, people don't know what Armor Contempt does. It means you ignore the first rend of any weapon, and most of their weapons are rend one. So, you know, the Gatling Silencers, the heavy side cannons on the Dread Knights. And so a lot of the time people are just taking their damn armor save versus them. So their firepower just didn't feel that good into a lot of matchups. So instead of that,
Grey Knights don't have a high AP, so
yeah, they got high because they're built to kill. All the profiles are built to kill demons. So who needs AP? It's just invuln save. So, you know, that's reflected in their rules. So they're not great at cracking other marine bodies. And so that's the reason I would rather have. I took a lot of swords. Like pretty much everything in my army, apart from 10 interceptors, has the four swords. Because I wanted the AP, I wanted to be good in it, rather than taking Grey Knights being bad into Armor Contempt. I wanted to take all the profiles that were good into Armor Contempt. So it's a very melee based Grey Knight build.
Yeah, I dig it. Well, I mean, I like the thought process in that, and that you know what your position on the team is, know how you can maneuver and have the experience to pull forth. I mean, how do you think you guys are going to do?
We'll do okay. Like I said, playing on the Merc team, if we get into the top 10, it's an absolute coup. It's an absolute win. Because there's 28 nations in attendance. And yeah, if the mercenary team can crack the top 10, that'd be phenomenal. Top half would be a pass, I think. That's what we're aiming for.
With the enthusiasm there is cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everyone's just stoked that this event is able to be run and we're all back together again. Because there's people in this world that I only get to see at this event. And so, yeah, I'm just so happy.
So the Merc team is made up of people from all sorts of different nations.
Yeah, they like to treat it like the United Nations team, where they take a conglomeration of different players and slap them all together and try and mix and match and, you know, talk about different philosophies and different things. It's a really cool way of learning how everyone else does it. It's some awesome perspectives.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I'm looking forward to hearing how it goes. You know, certainly,
yeah, man,
you know, you can cheer on teams and, you know, can follow along for anyone that is interested in BCP. I believe you can see everything happening there.
Yep, absolutely, you can.
Heck yeah. Well, look, that's our show. I know it may be a few minutes shorter this week, but it's been a blast thing running through these topics, and we'll get this one out on time. All right, well, folks, that's it for this one. Please like, share, subscribe, leave some comments, get this back up on YouTube and all wherever you get podcasts and aggregators and that kind of stuff. We'll see you all next week.
See you then.
Bye, everybody.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.